Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Here's a 40-20 attempt. And it's not bad.
Oh, he's
got
it.
It is. It's there. It just kept going and going.
Welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast. It's 40-20, not live. Phil's got biscuits. They're right from Switzerland, I understand, Phil.
I have a pack for each of us, bought in by the great Carsten on his latest rugby league tour. Yes, we've got Lotus Biscoff, Swiss variety. The trouble is, we're not together at the moment, therefore that's packs for me.
We're on the Sports Social Podcast Network, we're on rugbyleague.com as well. And people have been saying, when are you going to bring back letters from the Rugby League Express? Well, look, I've got the Rugby League Express in front of me. Because, James, I've got to read this letter from Jay Shipley of Leeds, who says, among other things, about calling the commentators on Sky clowns, which I think is interesting, because if I wrote a letter to the League Express saying all your columnists are clowns, I don't think I'd get that printed. But Jay Shipley says, we have referees who care more about their looks than refereeing the game fairly. Now, James, you're part of the referees department. Sort that out. We went to see them training, Phil. They're not all there with Brill Cream and stuff, are they?
I'm just trying to work out who that might be. Who might be the accusing of the referee being a little bit vain. We're all a little bit vain, aren't we? I'm sure if I was on TV these days, I'd have plenty of comments on social media about my moustache, but yeah, it is what it is, isn't it?
I have to delete them every week, that's the problem.
It was funny though, when Ben Taylor, I think when we returned from lockdown, Ben had this new hairstyle, and it lasted no more than a week. I think he got rinsed on social media, and he realised that wasn't for him.
I'd give anything for a new hairstyle.
I might bring back the Mohawk thing. I enjoyed that during lockdown. Phil, what news has happened this week?
You know what? I was thinking about this. This is one of the most mystifying weeks of rugby league I've ever experienced. We're at the third way point of the Super League season. I'm still trying to work out what Jake Connor was doing last Thursday.
Well, that seems so long ago now.
Some of the results were shocks. I'm not sure that we haven't seen a slight drop in standard over this round, as well as injuries. I think, again, squads look thinner by the time you've got a third of the way into the season. And what I can't get my head around this weekend, which I'm sure you can help me with, is there are two sets of fans whose teams won that seem to want their coach removed. One of them is sitting at the top of the league, but apparently not playing attractive enough rugby. The other is 2 points off third in the league, and isn't winning with enough panache. I've never seen anything quite like I did at Hull on Sunday, which is when the Leeds team went over to acknowledge the away fans. They were met with a chorus aimed at the coach that a certain small section wanted him out of the club. I'm not sure how that helps the confidence of the players, who clearly are quite behind the coach. But obviously, it struck me that there's an element of arrogance about that as to what you expect your team to be able to do. Takes no account of how the opposition have played, but also this sense of entitlement, which again I think is endemic of society, unfortunately. I just don't get it. I don't understand what being a supporter is in that respect. I'm not sure that paying your money to go and watch your team with an expressed desire when you've won to demand the head of the coach is what I term being a fan. But so that's probably my age.
I don't know whether scapegoats at Leeds for people to pick on, because Wakefield, we always have one, so you know, I get used to it.
Matt Ball is the scapegoat at the moment. It seems he and the coach, and obviously the saviour, because Matt Frawley is the scapegoat, despite the fact that every week he does play behind a pack that isn't making metres, which doesn't excuse him kicking out on the full twice. But clearly the saviour is Jack Sinfield, who clearly is the greatest player Leeds have ever had. And if the coaching staff would only realise that, he'd play every week. Clearly the coaching staff work with him every single day of the week, know exactly at what his physical development stage is at, and are looking to introduce him when they think he would best suit their circumstance. And again, London this Friday would have been a very good time for him to play, perhaps, which is no disrespect to London. But now what do you do when the fans are calling for it? It's almost like you're pandering to a minority, which further undermines the position of the coach. As I say, I don't understand any of it, but that's probably because of my age.
Must be nice, James, for a match to go by where the fans are not singing songs about the referee and singing about coaches instead.
Yeah, I think Rowan Smith probably feels exactly how most referees feel most weeks, but he probably doesn't look at social media. I'm sure he doesn't. I would just say, though, that you know, if four out of the last five games they've conceded over 50 points, Hull, if London's a team where you might try play Sinfield, then why wouldn't Hull be a team that you'd try Sinfield? I don't know. I can see people's points where if you've got a halfback that's making sort of recurring errors, sort of dropping out or whatever, it doesn't go 10 or it goes out on the full and things like that, then at what point do you try and give somebody a go? So at what point do you drop somebody for their performance? I mean, we were always sort of told, no, you're not dropped, but you're not refereeing Super League. So I don't know what, I never knew what it was, and it was performance related, but you weren't dropped. I don't know, there has to come a point where they have to give somebody a crack and even stick him on the bench and give him 20 minutes, you know. But I think Leeds fans would have gone there with an expectation that they would have rolled Hull over, and they didn't, and they got frustrated. Now, I agree with you to some extent. When we used to go watch Dewdrew when I was a kid, you know, you'd hear fans booing or having a go at players and stuff, and we never got it as a family. We were never a family that left early either, irrespective of whether we're getting hammered. We would stay to the bitter end. Now, maybe we're like sadists, I don't know, and that's why I refereed. But like for me, if you're a fan, a true fan, a supporter of a club, you support them through thick and thin. Now, some clubs, like, you know, even fans of St. Helens have been calling about, you know, Paul Wellens, for example, and saying that they, you know, if they make the grand final, that's the absolute bare minimum. I mean, it's just sheer nonsense. And actually, the fact that they've been so accustomed over so many years of such success, try being a supporter of a club like, you know, Dewsbury, for example, or Wakefield, Richard.
We did won the whatever division last year. They got promotion, you know. You get a trophy for that, probably, you know.
I think the other thing is that Leeds did play a youngster yesterday, you know, who probably made one of the most impressive debuts that I've seen in terms of not only his finishing prowess, but his calmness. You know, 19, waited for his chance. But the coach doesn't get any credit for playing him, which, again, is something I don't understand. You know, as Hull have illustrated over the last couple of rounds, you can't just introduce wholesale youngsters. You've got to try and plan the way you bring them in. Clearly, Leeds had an injury crisis, but there were a couple of other youngsters who they could have played ahead of Riley Lunn. They gave him his chance. He's been nurtured over the last 2 years that Rowan Smith's ethos has been in the club. And he had a fantastic debut, but the coach gets no credit for that. And I'm not sticking up for Rowan Smith. I just think that's a very strange way to support your club when your team goes over, who are clearly lacking in a little bit of confidence at the moment. They're coming off some performances where they haven't played as well as perhaps they could have done, and you know, four defeats in five. And you just think, what is the point of shouting them? But so we won't start with Leeds because they're clearly where they are in the league table, not at the moment in crisis.
Now, we were told not to talk about Leeds as men, talk about everything else to do with Leeds, which we will do as the programme goes on. As we started with this game, and I'll go on to your comments on the mailbag in a bit, but I don't want to say it's the worst game I've ever seen, because that's just hyperbole and nonsense, but it was a very low-quality game, Phil, and you were there, so you had to sit through it. You know, you had to. I could have turned over and watched the snooker.
I think the great thing, the converse of not understanding the Leeds fans, I thought the Hull fans were brilliant, considering everything that they've gone through. Right from the start, they scored first, which they hadn't done before this season, and that gave the stadium a real lift. And they really stuck with their team because they saw effort. I have to say that Leeds tended to panic when they had the ball in hand. They took the wrong options on so many occasions and looked like they wanted to score off every play, which sometimes is a sign of a team that isn't playing with a huge amount of confidence. And for all of the fact that Hull were got their fans back on side and clearly made a big incremental step on where they'd been the week before, they never really threatened the Leeds line in a concerted manner to look like they were going to score enough points to win that game. There was a long interview with Richie Myler before the game on local radio, which, because we were sat next to him, we managed to listen to most of it, where he's talking about what he wants to do and how he's going to build, you know, this identity and culture that everybody talks about, and how it does take time and how they do want to use their young players. But again, you can't play them all at once, and you don't really want to put them into a losing environment. From what I can gather, there are going to be more personnel changes this week at Hull. There's going to be some players possibly going out and some more experienced ones coming in. But they're no further ahead with their coach. So it was one of those games. One of the media, who I shan't name and shame, said beforehand that it was despairing against the desperate. And to be honest, that's how it sort of turned out.
Two bald men fighting over a comb. I've got putting lists of names together of people who could be the next coach of Hull FC, including people who obviously aren't going to take the job, like Sean Wayne, who's, you know, got, you know, a fairly good job at Leeds and at England, rather, and he does something with Wigan as well. And Steve McNamara, who used to play for Hull, but that's quite a good job. Has he recently signed a new deal at Catalans? Oh, so I do pay attention, listener. Well, I've got a name for you that hasn't been named in all of these lists across the media. And yes, there is a little bit of mischief in my eye, but former grand final winner, works well with lesser resources, fewer resources than teams in the same division, seems to improve players wherever they are. Amanda Wilkinson, she should be the next coach of Hull FC. There you go. Hey, it's more likely to happen than Steve McNamara. So that's all I'm going to say. But I can't wait for those lists to be reused in a couple of weeks when we go with either whoever else gets sat next, which will no doubt be happening.
Was my name in the hat, Richard, after last week?
Surprisingly not, but, you know, if you give it a couple of weeks, they will run out of people to talk about on the telly. The longer the job goes on, the more they're going to have to just get desperate for names. Anyone who's good on the rugby league manager game will be putting their CV into the ring, hat, one of those things anytime.
But just on that, I mean, clearly they have made an approach to Paul Rowley, as I understand it, and he's turned that down. But so they obviously made the decision to get rid of Tony Smith with no one actually in mind to come in other than the potential of Paul Rowley, and he's turned it down. So then you do wonder now, is anybody else going to be second best or second, not second best, but second choice or third choice maybe? I don't know. But I don't know. I think it's still, for me, that still brings back to the question of why did Tony Smith go? Had he lost the dressing room? Is that why he went and they just thought there was no going back? Or... But to get rid of the coach and then get rid of a couple of players at the same time seemed an odd move.
I think the impression we got from being there was the Paul Rowley deal was virtually over the line, and it came as big a shock to Hull, him not going, as it did to Salford, him staying. So I think that set them back. The impression I've got is that because they were together at Warrington, that Simon Griggs and Richie Myler get on really well together. So I wouldn't be surprised if Griggs is in situ now until the end of the season. Clearly, the interesting addition to whatever, however it's going to work, the performance department, again, undefined, is the return of Gareth Ellis 6 months after he left, when Tony Smith decided that perhaps he was superfluous to the organisation he was trying to build there. So it'd be really interesting. There's a lot of talk about what it's going to mean to play for Hull. And I think one of the reasons Gareth is back is because he is the epitome of what the fans would say it means to play for Hull. And it's clear he left a big impression on the younger players when he was there. And I think that they'll be hoping it'll be doing the same again. So that might be more of an important appointment for the remainder of this season than actually securing a head coach.
I think if you're talking about culture as well, then Gareth Ellis is your man, isn't he? You know, as you said, he played there for a long time, played in the NRL very successfully, international. So he is the kind of person. And again, that's probably an odd one that he wasn't retained by Tony Smith. And only Tony Smith can probably answer that, or Gareth if he wants to.
I hope he got a nice redundancy payout to then go back to the club who's just paid him out. But well done, Gareth Ellis. Probably the greatest alumni from Selby High School. One assumes, anyway.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18
plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Speaking of the NRL, Lewis Dodd's going there, which some people on the telly in Australia don't know who he is. But in fairness, I don't know who half the players who come over from there to here are. So I can't really criticise them. But that he seems to be going to Southsville, which, well, I mean, I don't know if I want to go to South at the minute. They're not very good.
I think if you're going to go, that's exactly the club you'd want to go to, because the expectation levels will be relatively low. I think that's a blow for Saints, because, again, the word probably 3 weeks ago was that it was about to sign a renewed long-term contract at St Helens, but good luck to him at South. We'll see how good he is. It's really tough for that pivot position in such an intense competition to make an immediate impact, to how much patience not only the South coaching staff but the fans will have. They clearly see him as part of the change that they need to get them up the table. I also think it's interesting for St Helens now, because we know that they're going to go through transition. We talked about this in the close season, that the one thing Paul Wellens will have to do is manage the kind of transition great teams have to go through when they start breaking up. And again, changing the coach, as well as, you know, so many of the key players coming to the point where they're going to have to be replaced. I think it would be absolute folly. You know, again, listening to what Richie Myler was saying, you can have a very small instant impact if all you want is a coach that will shout and bawl and win you something in the short term. But you can't change anything long term if you don't get the right person in place. And Paul Wellens has served two apprenticeships under coaches who were both revered at St. Helens and incredibly successful, and he's going to be the one that's going to have to manage that change. To not give him the opportunity to do that, I think would be foolish. But I accept that some St. Helens fans, a minority of St. Helens fans, have a different view.
Apologies for Terry, who asked us to talk about anything except Hull, which we've done for pretty much the start of the programme. Jason Costigan, our colleague at rugbyleague.com, asked us, what about priority areas for development for International Rugby League? It was International Week in the women's game, Phil. Wins for Wales and Netherlands in World Cup qualifiers. Wales now play Netherlands again, and Netherlands play Ireland. Am I right in that? Or yes. Yes.
Yeah, the Italy-Netherlands game was an elimination game to see who went into the same group with Wales and Ireland. So, effectively, if Wales beat the Netherlands, they qualify. But if Netherlands beat the Ireland, they've got a chance of getting in the World Series, you would think. What was interesting, I watched quite a lot of the Italy-Netherlands game because it was on the ERL YouTube feed. And it was really enjoyable. Two things came across because... But clearly, a lot of the women are converts from Rugby Union. So the first thing was the atmosphere. The sighting of the camera was right in the middle of the grandstand in what looked a very picturesque stadium in Venice. And the atmosphere was fantastic. The Italians, incredibly passionate, screaming and shouting all the time. The Dutch took a party who was situated next to them, I think. Quite a lot of them were relatives of the girls who were playing, just as loud when their team were on top. And some of the skill levels were fantastic. The play the balls were slightly slower, because I think, again, if you've got rugby union players, the first instinct isn't to stand up and necessarily play the ball. The contact was great. Some of the skill level in moving the ball was excellent. The Dutch had a winger who was incredibly quick. I mean, she scored what was probably the game-breaking try, even though I think it only made it something like 18-6 in the first half. But she went from 70 metres down the touchline. Nobody got near her. And the talent that is out there is really encouraging. The Wales-Ireland game sounded incredibly competitive. And yet, what can you do for development? Just throw more money at it. It's the same the whole of rugby league, isn't it? Either nations like Greece were looking to get more grants from their governments now that they're officially recognised, or you just put everything into talent development programmes, play as many games as you can, start domestic competition, and see if put in as much milk at the bottom and see if you can get any cream at the top.
If I'm assuming the Italian Federation doesn't have the budget the same size as some championship clubs, the fact that they can get streams sorted, then, no excuses. Same drum, same bang, bang, bang. Ian says, clubs not announcing attendances. They should have to do this to ensure transparency under IMG fandom criteria. Good old IMG. Hooker still don't give out their attendance, so it looked busy at the Craven Park on Friday nights, but we don't know exactly how many. They should, Ian, but they don't. I don't know. Hypothetic RL podcast says, I heard Warrington and Wigan have approached the NRL to get involved with Las Vegas next year. Is it a good move, or do we risk smothering the fire with too many games? Should Super League look to take their own games there later in the season? I'm going to assume we can't afford to, but are we still talking about the World Club Challenge going there, or is that going somewhere else, or do we know what's happening with that? I don't know. Have to wait and find out. Andrew says, bringing back the match day programme should be part of their AMG criteria, and all games in Super League should be on at different times, like in the NRL, was a programme collector. I'd certainly agree with that, but I don't know. They say they can't make any money of it. Oh, here's one James can answer. From Rugby League Passport. When the video referee is reviewing play, does he see the same thing we see on the telly, or is he looking at the different feed and angles?
I think because you can hear it. I mean, by the way, I've not been to Wilmslow since they've moved there this season. So, but my presumption is that what we see is what they are looking at, because they're talking through the angles that you can see, and so they're talking over top of it. But they'll have in front of them each angle, and they'll be able to see. You can hear them sometimes say, "Oh, camera 4 or camera 6 or whatever." So yeah, they can request which angles they look at, but what we see is what they're looking at.
Being mixers now. Kieran says, Sheffield with two clean sheets in a row. We'll come to them. Big game for them on Friday. Shabba, 1980, great year, says either Challenge Cup later in the season with a different format or an extra competition to keep interest at the bottom end with no relegation. The bottom 16 championship returns. That's what we want to see. How do we change the format of the Challenge Cup? Like have 11 aside or something? I don't know. Maybe combine the men, the women and the wheelchair teams. I don't know. But thanks for your comments on things. I'm sure we'll discuss the changes to the Challenge Cup in... well, we haven't got any changes yet, but we expect there will be next year. We don't know. Wheelchair Challenge Cup, though, Phil. Leeds are in the semi-finals, which is good news. And they'll play Wigan, who, of course, beat them in the grand final last year. So that's a game that everyone will want to see. And it's scheduled currently for the same time as the running game semi-finals on the weekend of the 18th and 19th.
I think the important thing about wheelchair is that, you know, we've been fans of it ever since we were introduced to it. And we all said that we hope it doesn't follow the same footprint for development that the men's game does, in the same way that we hope, you know, perhaps the women's game doesn't. You can afford to be a little bit different, capture new areas. You're not actually bound by your history, which is quite exciting. So, you know, two of the wheelchair quarterfinals, really exciting. You know, Leeds against Hereford and Edinburgh against London. You know, we can't get that in the men's running game. Hereford apparently put up a really good show against Leeds. Game played in York, as the London-Edinburgh game is going to be. I think they really enjoyed the occasion. People that were there said that it wasn't necessarily about the result. It was about being welcomed and playing at that higher level and seeing, you know, being able to benchmark themselves. And the two tries that they scored were roundly received by the crowd that were there, which is great. And I would imagine it will be pretty much the same when London play Edinburgh. But yeah, Leeds now play Wigan. It is a Leeds home game, though I gather it will be played in Hull. And then the second semi-final will be amongst the teams that haven't played yet. So it'll be either London or Edinburgh against Hull or Catalan, which are now moved to early May. But yeah, exciting. And Challenge Cup final will be in Sheffield again, and we'll be on the telly.
I'll try to get to the final this year. Hopefully someone can hook me up with a stream to the semi-final, please. That'd be very nice. Someone just take your phone. I don't know. Am I right in thinking, James, that this weekend there were no cards in Super League? No one's been banned. What's the match review panel going to do?
Yeah, they've been made redundant. No, I was Googling whilst we were talking. I thought, where's the news? Where? Because usually now I'm sort of into this podcast by a year. I know I'm going to do notes and anything. I've realised that it's pointless. So at 7 o'clock when we started tonight, I thought, right, I best look. What were the results? Remind myself, what were the results? Let me have a quick look. Has there been a news item on disciplinary? Nothing today. So, and I've noticed that they stopped putting it on Twitter these days, which I totally get why they're doing that, because it's just an open invite for people to slag them off. So, you know, I get why they've done that, but there's no news item. So, but I don't think there was a card this weekend. I haven't watched all the games, so I'm not always in tune with that, but I don't believe there has been. So maybe nobody's been charged. I'd be surprised, though.
The only naughty boy or girl in rugby league this week was some guy in rugby this week, rather, not rugby league. We're all clean cut, clean shaven people. Well, we're not, but, you know. Is some fellow out in Mallorca? What they're doing out there? What's going on? In Super League, and we'll talk more about these games in detail. Well, some of these games in detail after the break. I'll get the couple out of the way before we go to that break. Now that there's nothing really to talk about, because I'm guessing. What game did you do this week, by the way, James?
Cast London.
Oh yes, you did, didn't you? So, having watched that game, is there anything to talk about? Because I didn't watch it.
Very little. The game was over probably after half an hour. I can't remember what the part-time score was, but it was a lot to nothing.
13-0. Cash rubbish in the second half, then that's what we can assume from them.
Yeah, I mean, they scored within the... In fact, actually, they scored before I turned it on. I thought, what is going on? It's 3 minutes past eight, and they're already on the board, so I had to watch that back on Opta the first few minutes. But they'd obviously kicked off on time, which is a rarity, so that's worth noting, isn't it? But yeah, the game, they held them after that first try. They held them for a while, London, but then sort of they scored back-to-back tries. They didn't probably touch the ball for about 15 minutes. I mean, I hadn't seen that game the week before when they played Salford. They must have played better when they played Salford. They were very poor in that first half. And I guess it's difficult, you know, once you're 30-0 up with not much of an opposition you're playing against, to then maintain that into the second half. Now, whether Cast sort of eased off and London got a bit better, it probably was a little bit of that. I think if you're the Cast coach, you're probably saying, well, actually, some of our second halves haven't been as good as our first halves. My message, if I was Craig Lingle at halftime, was let's really turn the screw here. And yeah, they scored an extra 10 points. The result was never in doubt. But I think if you're Craig Lingle, you'd probably wanted them to carry on. So I think that will be something that they'll probably look at going into the game this week. But very little otherwise to report in that game.
I did watch the second half, not live, but I watched it. It was on Sky. I was waiting for something else to come on. I can't remember what. And it was on and there was nothing else on. So I watched the second half. Courtney Winfield-Hill, she's very good on the telly. I know people are going to disagree because she's a woman, but she's one of the best speakers we've got, Phil. And we know that because we've spoken to her loads of times. And she's one of those people who gets what her role is in terms of speaking to people.
So yeah, she came across well in the commentary.
Yeah, it's all about education, isn't it? That you know, what she will tell you, very much like Lucy Ward in football, is insider knowledge that you as a fan wouldn't otherwise know. And if it's done right in partnership with a commentator who is brilliantly describing the action, it's a great watching experience, irrespective of actually what you're watching and the score at the time. So, yeah, more of her. And whoever was on the touchline at Hull KR did a pretty decent job as well.
Not a Dewsbury accent she's got, Courtney Winfield. I'm trying, somewhere in Yorkshire, isn't it? But I can't work it out quite. But I did enjoy when she called it the man of the match later on as well, which will upset people. So that was good. Before we go to the break, before I forget, because I've just remembered, Women's Rugby League, we'll talk about the results in a bit. If people want a bit of easy publicity, just put a bid in for Fury off Gladiators, because she's left Rugby Union. Obviously, she's going to be too busy to actually play Rugby League because she's busy beating people up with pugil sticks. But she's from Dewsbury. She's local. Pretend to try and sign her. It's like everyone else does with other players.
Talking of Dewsbury, one thing we didn't mention in the Leeds Hull game, great performance from Liam Rush in the middle. You know, I think, was that his second Super League game? Third. I know he did a cup tie, didn't he? But, you know, had real authority, went to the screen when he needed to, had no controversial moments, didn't lose control of the game. And I think, again, we talk a lot about Riley Lum as a young player coming through, and Jack Charles at Hull is, you know, if he's nurtured properly, he's clearly going to be a star. Well, you know, Liam Rush needs to be added to that list. I thought he was excellent.
Well coached, you see, Phil. Well coached.
So I need Fiverr for that. I said, no, do you need
I've not reviewed him yet, so it's nothing to do with me, by the way.
I saw Tara Jones get a bottle of whiskey from Wigan to celebrate her being, you know, doing her first professional get, whatever it was. So we've done podcasting for 10 years, so where's our bottle of whiskey? Where's Matt Pete knocking on our door with a bottle of whiskey? That's the big question. We got biscuits from Carsten. Thanks, Carsten. We'll be back after the break with more Rugby League here on 4020 Not Live. Why are we turning to a broadcaster all of a sudden?
The best, the number one, greatest innovation the game has brought in, 4020.
Welcome back to the second half of 4020 Not Live, which has already talked about Hull and Leeds. So I don't know why I'm saying if you missed it. It's a podcast. You don't join halfway through. the big surprise to me this week in Super League perhaps came on Friday, and a game again I've not watched because I was watching the Hull KR Wigan game. Because you've got to support your own, haven't you, Phil? Because as you mentioned before, that touchline reporter, she's quite good. She's quite good. Lee 30, Catalans 2. I mean, any time a team score ends in 2, that's always something to celebrate. I don't think anyone would have necessarily seen that one. Certainly at halftime when it was 6-2 to Lee, Phil, and blitz them in the way that Castleford didn't in the other game.
Yeah, Jonathan Arthur effect is back, and you know, obviously had a massive influence on the game. I think Lee have had some turnover of personnel, haven't they? Tom Briscoe's joined Hull, Ed Chamberlain's gone to Hull on loan, Darnell McIntosh come in but not yet made his debut, and I think Adrian Lamb's just looking to shake it up a little bit to get the season started again. That is a fantastic result to do that. Again, Catalan's inconsistency at the moment will be a slight concern to Steve McNamara. They've come off their best performance of the season, beating Hull Cowra at home. And, you know, arguably they had one of their least effective ones. But let's hope that, you know, Lee's season now can obviously get a run of victories together that will propel them up into the fight for the playoffs. Because, you know, if you look at the league table after a third of the season, to have eight clubs in contention and possibly Lee as a ninth, you know, isn't that what we want? Uncertainty of outcome? So, yeah, no, that is a brilliant performance from Lee. Never saw that coming at all. But as you say, unfortunately came on the same night as Hull Cowra putting in a brilliant performance against Wigan, and probably didn't get the credit that it deserved.
26 points to 10, Hull Cowra. 18-0 up at half-time. I mean, I'd back Wigan in this one, so I was counting my losses at half-time. But that is some performance from Hull Cowra. I know we've been talked about them. You know, they had the great season from the last couple of years. Will they be able to take that into this year? And six wins, three defeats. They're there in contention. They're only 2 points behind the leaders after this weekend, because it's been a ridiculous week for results. But again, great performance from Willie Peters' men.
I didn't see that game because I was watching the Cask game, but I was surprised by the score. You know, and having gone to Catalan and been beaten resoundingly the week before, and I think turning, according to Willie Peters, their worst performance of the season, that was some turnaround, wasn't it? I think what I was reading on social media was that how bad Wigan were on the night. Was it just a night where they just didn't turn up?
I think it's one of them where you don't want to say that, do you? Because it kind of takes away from Hull Cowra. It certainly wasn't Wigan's best performance, and it probably would have been their worst of the season so far. But Hull Cowra got in front, never looked bad, and never really looked troubled in that one as well, which is the main thing. And, you know, you saw the shots of Matt Peat in the stands just looking like, what do we do? How do we change things? And they weren't able to do so. But it's not as if Wigan have had a bad start to the season, is it then? And what a great game we've got on Thursday now, because they play Catalans, obviously both coming off big and surprising defeats. Probably not surprising that Wigan lost at Hull Cowra, but by the manner of it. And it'd be great to see how both teams get back on the proverbial horse on Thursday night.
I think it's a characteristic Wigan performance rather than necessarily being one that would cause you any kind of concern if you were a Wigan fan. But I think that's to the credit of Hull Cowra. They shook them off their game early on, 12-0 up inside 11 minutes. And, Wigan never really got back on the horse, but that's because the commitment of the Hull Cowra defence. Again, Ryan Hall's performance sort of summed up Hull Cowra. Back to his absolute, you know, in the week that it was sort of announced that he wouldn't be there next year, he put in the kind of performance that you just say, yeah, you are an ultimate true professional, because if you can, you know, put everything that's gone on this week aside and produce the kind of numbers that he did and the try that he scored, then he's the kind of bloke that the rest of the team would want to follow. So it was a brilliant performance from Hull Cowra. And Wigan maybe slightly off form, but don't take anything away from the team that won in this one.
Don't like this. We seem to be very positive again this week. I'll work backwards to Thursday after we've been to Saturday, which is even more confusing. Salford 17, Warrington 12. Again, the favourites losing in that one. Obviously now Sam is a rubbish coach. He was great a couple of weeks ago, but he's terrible now. He's not going back to Souths. But another great performance from Salford, playing for their coach who they all wanted to stay, and he stayed. And there you go, as Ryan Brightley said afterwards. So 17-12, another nice win for Salford, who, you know, ease themselves at the moment into that top six.
I think it was a big win for Salford because, again, a week of absolute turmoil behind the scenes. I think most people had accepted that perhaps they would be losing Paul Rowley. I think Kurt Haggerty was being lined up, his current assistant, to take on the role while they decided what they were going to do. And then, you know, they turn up for training on the Wednesday and Paul's still there and there's a feel-good factor around it. Again, very, very committed to each other in defence. And that's what won it. Warrington is still looking for the level of consistency that Sam Burgess would want. It doesn't make them a bad side. They had a heroic win against Lee the week before. This was another one that could have gone either way. They're in games, which is what Sam Burgess would want. He knows that they're not at the point where they're going to win every game. The big thing coming out of that game was the injury to Leon Hayes. Obviously, I think all our good wishes go to him in what is clearly going to be a, a long recovery just when he'd started to cement his place in the team and is the ethos of Sam giving young local talent its opportunity if they're good enough, if he deems that they're good enough. It's not, you know, a policy whereby he's just doing it out of the goodness of his heart. Leon Hayes was in there because he was the right player to be in there. Be very interesting to see how they cope with that. Obviously, the logic would say, you know, Josh Drinkwater would come back, with the word on the street being that Josh Drinkwater won't be there next year. So be very, very interesting to see how that works.
It's always interesting at this time of year when we're already talking. I mean, we're talking before the season about who's going where for next year, but you've got players who must know that they're not going to be at their clubs next year and thinking, as you mentioned with Ryan Hall, although he's got a job lined up, so he's okay and he is a professional, as you know, but some of these players must be looking over their shoulders thinking, what have I got to do now? What do I do? I don't know. What I do know is St Helens 13, Huddersfield Giants 12, which kicked off the weekend, was a wonderfully bizarre game of rugby league, highlighting why Jake Connor does not get picked for England by Sean Wayne, despite the fact everyone, every year, he goes on a great run of form, never says, why is Sean Wayne not picking him? And this is why, because we saw the two sides of Jake Connor in this match. I don't like it when, after the game, and it's like the boxing, when they're all stood around laughing with and joking with the opposition, and I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute. If I'm a Huddersfield fan, I've paid however much to go across to St Helens on a Thursday night ticket, having to go over the 62. You're laughing and joking after this one. His actions, you know, it's all right. We can go on and say, well, the referee did this and the referee did that, and that cost the team a game, as Rowan Smith tends to do. But in this situation, Jake Connor decides, I'm not going to bother trying to beam the fence. I'm going to go chase the referee around and moan about something. And Huddersfield concede a soft try, very soft try. Is that fair?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I didn't watch the press conference, but I'm pretty sure that there was reference made about by Ian Watson that, you know, perhaps there was a point that he had a point, Jake Connor, that a penalty maybe should have been given by the referee. But for me, that exactly is the wrong message. That plays into his hands. Like, for me, you control your own destiny. Look, we could argue whether it is or isn't or should or shouldn't be a penalty. To me, it's irrelevant. Actually, you just play to the whistle. Look, there was an incident on the OKR game with Wigan, wasn't there? OKR went length of the field to score a try, because basically players stopped, turned and looked at the referee and were like waiting for a whistle to go. Forget that. Just play to the whistle. You know, and that, I think you've hit the nail on the head. That is exactly why he does not get picked for England and will not get picked for England unless he shows a change in his attitude and behaviour. And, you know, if Ian Watson saying that in the press conference, in my opinion, is completely and utterly the wrong way to handle it. He should just say, well, you know, what we need to do is we need to learn lessons and play to the whistle. If he's not happy with a decision, he can take that up with the RFL. But for me, I think whilst ever you make an excuse for a player, it gives a player a way out.
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite as bizarre as that in a professional game. That a player who is at marker goes and chases the referee because he feels aggrieved, and the dummy half exploits the space and scores the try that actually changed the game. I think it did change the game. I know that Lomax didn't drop the goal until late on, but you know, Saints had been knocking at the door for quite a while, and Huddersfield's defence had been superb. And then, you know, the players that are putting 60 tackles, like you, Luke Yates, looks around and goes, right, what have you done this to me for? I think the other thing that we needs to be saying about Jake Connor, it's not a witch hunt of him. But clearly he can win games and has won games. But this was an occasion where the boot was on the other foot. He had one kick out on the full, and he had one pass when they had an overlap that went over the sideline. It was just the most bizarre performance I've seen for quite a while. And it kicked off a weekend that ended up being completely bizarre.
The other thing I would say is that, you know, and it's not just Jake Connor, by the way, but players who have a propensity to do something or milk for a penalty or flap about on the floor or dive, trying to con the referee into giving a penalty or a six again in the ruck, for example. What we've often found, or I often found in review, sometimes they legitimately should have had a penalty or a six again, and they weren't given it because it's the boy who cried wolf. That if you're constantly having somebody trying to get one over on you, then you're almost conditioned to think, well, they're trying it again. And actually, they may have a case on this occasion, and then they don't get something when they legitimately get it. So actually, if those players tidy up and don't try and play act, and they probably get what they deserve when they deserve it.
In the women's, oh, let me hang on, fix this week in Super League before I go back into the paper. Wigan Catalans, as mentioned, on Thursday. Friday, Huddersfield Salford, the Ian Watson derby. Leeds versus London, Brian McDermott derby. Warrington versus Hull, Richie Myler derby. Sunday, Hull KR St Helens and Lee versus Castleford, the Oliver Holmes derby. Women's Super League this week, Leeds 68, Warrington 0. I do like how Sam Burgess has got Armani Sharrock involved in the coaching with the men's team there. I think that's a very good thing to do. Obviously not a great result for Warrington, but Leeds, the favourites to win the Super League. Mark was mentioning it on the radio on Sunday during the build-up to the Wigan-Featherston game. Should they be the favourites? He asked Courtney Winfield-Hill.
We'll need to see when they play one of the acknowledged top teams, but their defence looks pretty much on point at the moment.
Wigan beat Featherston 54-12 in a game that was on national radio, of all things. Barrow 8, York 28. I thought this would be a tough one for York, because Barrow look like they're a team who are going to cause teams trouble, and 28-8 suggests that was the case. Four tries, I think it was, for Emma Kershaw in the end. And St Helens 60, Huddersfield 6. I've got a bone to pick with St Helens because I was on the minus 60 and obviously that let me down. Nines qualifiers this weekend in the women's game. In the championship, Batley 22, York 18, Bradford 13, Widnes 14. That sounds like a belting game at odds. So Widnes winning it with a try and two late drop goals in that one. Doncaster 38, Dewsbury 12.
On the Bradford one, Tom Holmes back.
Yes.
Again, I think, you know, we're all absolutely delighted for him that with everything he's been through health-wise, that whilst that result will have hurt him, far more important than anything as to who got the 2 points is that he's back on the field and he has all our love and hope that it's another great long season for him from here on in.
Yeah, Doncaster doing well, much to the chagrin of Dewsbury fans, because that's a win that sees them 3 from 6 now. But the team we've got to talk about is Halifax. 28-12 beaten at home by Swindon. So obviously, again, you know, great for Swindon, kind of our adopted club in the championship. I don't know what's going on at Halifax, because they win at Wembley last year. Obviously, they had to change coach, but they brought in Liam Finn, who's got great familial connections with the club and, of course, did a great job at Dewsbury. So it's not as if they appointed someone who wasn't doing a good job elsewhere. But they've got a couple of high-profile players who one would assume are on big money or biggish money for the championship. And they've won 2 of their 6 games so far. Maybe it's unfair for me to give praise to Doncaster, who won 3 of 6, and be saying, well, why are Halifax 2 from 6? But something's not working there at the minute for the Panthers, and I don't know what that is.
I don't know if I was listening to a little bit of the radio on Sunday and caught something about it was however many minutes since he'd actually scored a game, scored a try. It was 20-0, I think, at halftime in that fixture. They got nil, I think, was it the week before? Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. There's something not quite right there. I mean, the scant consolation, they won the second half, didn't they? 12-8. But Halifax fans, tell us, you know, what's happening?
Maybe it is just you've got a couple of players on a lot of money. I don't know how much the average salary in the championship. I assume it's not that much, but
I think it's working. Dual Redwood lead, so it's Rowan Smith's fault.
Sheffield, 2 nils in a row, as was mentioned earlier by, I think it was Kieran on Twitter. 54-0 they beat Barry yesterday. I mean, what a game that is on Friday. That's the best game on Friday night, is Sheffield versus Wakefield. Where can I see it? Nowhere. Wakefield beat
You could go to the game.
Well, I could go to the game. That is
true.
I could go to Sheffield. But I'll happily give them a tenner if they want to put it up stream.
But you've got a Sheffield shirt behind you, haven't you?
Yeah. Really, see, I could go in disguise. Wakefield beat Toulouse 28-12. I haven't heard from Carson whether that was a good game or not. And what sounded like a good game was Whitehaven 24, Featherston 28. It's interesting to see Featherston putting up highlights during the game of that one on social media. Why there isn't a highlights program for the Championship, League One, Women's Super League, when clubs are producing highlights, it wouldn't take much for someone to do a voiceover around them and put them up on YouTube. And other clubs do it individually. It should be a collective thing. This week,
somebody offered to do that once.
Yeah. But there were contractual issues then, but now there aren't any contractual issues.
Well, that's say, you've written your job description, Richard.
Like I didn't have at Wakefield.
That's you know, the job that you probably wouldn't get paid for, by the way.
Again, the great thing that Featherstone have done is realise that there aren't any rights for the competition and there's no reason why they shouldn't be putting highlights up there. Interesting that they've done it from an away ground as well rather than at home. Does sound like a terrific game. Certainly, I think the championship is turning out to be the competition that everybody said it would. And I think exemplified by the menu at Batley on game day, which I think Carsten did avail himself of.
Not the spiced parsnip soup at Hull. Less said about that, the better. Sheffield Wakefield.
It was bloody cold.
Sheffield Wakefield on Friday. The big rematch from the 1992 Yorkshire Cup final. Dewsbury Toulouse on Saturday evening. Sunday, Barrow Batley, Featherstone Halifax, Swinton Bradford. And I'll be an interesting one. Widnes Doncaster again. And York versus Whitehaven. Big games in the championship. No rugby on Monday, which is a bank holiday, isn't it? League One, Hunslet 22, North Wales 14, Midlands 16, Oldham 44. Had a man sent off in the first half, Midlands. I didn't realise that's where Callum McClelland had ended up. But he was on the score sheet there for the Hurricanes. But Oldham continue to be unbeaten at the top, as do the Keighley Cougars, winning 42-30 away at Rochdale. And it was Workington 52, Cornwall 18. So great week for Newcastle. Who didn't
Cornwall got that yet? That's a long journey.
Maybe they stayed there because they've got to go to Rochdale on Sunday. Keighley Hunslet, Oldham Newcastle, Rochdale Cornwall, and Workington Midlands are the games on Sunday afternoon. And I realised I went to the middle of the paper, and the Women's Super League pages results are on the back page of the paper anyway. That was my own fault. Leeds 2 from 2, Phil, you know. Leeds women, Leeds men, Leeds wheelchair, Leeds academy. What's going on? Leeds in crisis.
Terrible weekend for Leeds. All four teams won. Not quite in crisis.
Is there anything else that I haven't mentioned that we need to do? Apart from South's defence against, was it Melbourne they played? I was watching it the other morning. That was dreadful. They're not very good. 54-20. I mean, this is supposedly the best league in the world. 54-20. What was the other game? 60 points to 18. The Roosters winning away at the St. George Illawarra Dragons. What's going on there?
40-0. Cronulla won at Canberra as well.
Bad times.
Gold Coast, who never looked like winning a game this year in the opening stages of the competition, they go to New Zealand Warriors and win there. So I think you do watch that competition because you genuinely don't know what you're going to see week in, week out, which hopefully is... We're getting a little bit nearer to in Super League, which is something we should celebrate this week with the passing the third signpost for first third of the season. I don't think at this stage we have a clue who's going to be winning the competition, which is great.
Here's my other idea I forgot about. Obviously, it was Anzac Day down under. Why don't we have an Anzac round? I know it seems a strange thing to do, but because our Remembrance Sunday falls out of season... And we have so many players from the Southern Hemisphere in our competition. Why don't we just do it ourselves? Just an idea. It's not the best idea I've ever had. I don't think it's the worst, though. There've been plenty of those. Is that it? Is there anything else? I think we've covered everything, haven't we? Because it's been a quiet week, which is good. Which is why people have to make up lists of people who are going to do stuff. I don't know. Can you imagine if they did that with referees? Top five.
Well, they've probably done articles on lists of referees. Although they'll probably feature on the top of the penalty count in Super League because I think I still hold that record.
We now need to know who the listeners think are the referees who care more about their looks and refereeing the game fairly. I mean, there's no Bill Harrigan in Super League, is there, Phil? I mean, there was a man who definitely looked after his hair. He was definitely a hair care man.
Marcus Griffiths gets my vote.
Yeah, Marcus has got an interesting hairstyle, or he did it the last time I saw him anyway. It was sort of slicked backwards. Yeah.
Only envy from my own.
James, thank you. Phil, thank you. We'll be back. Well, I mean, we can do Monday if you want, unless you're busy on the bank holiday. I don't know.
I think one of us is abroad.
I'm in Tenerife the next couple of weeks. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Deserting the ship. Well, we'll find someone, Phil, or we'll just talk amongst ourselves because, you know, we can do that.
I might be able to dial in. You never know. You never know. If the Wi-Fi is good enough, I might be able to dial in from my sun lounger.
Just don't do it with a cocktail in your hand.
I thought it was good job you finished that word off then.
Be very careful.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd be there on my sun lounger in my speedos. That's not an image that people want to see.
We wear a Spanish police bearing tasers.
There might be somebody from Wheelchair Rugby League who would want to join us as well, so I'll see if he's around.
So join us next week for more Rugby League excitement. Thank you very much. Like, share, subscribe, do all the things you're supposed to do, and we'll talk to you again in a bit. Sports Social Podcast Network.